Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH. Streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. Seattle saw its 29th homicide, and South King County homelessness is getting worse. That is what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
Let's start in Seattle before heading over to Burien. Seattle detectives are investigating a homeless encampment homicide. They believe it's a homicide. They found a body, or someone called in a body, at a homeless encampment in the Highland Park neighborhood of South Seattle. When cops got there to look at what had occurred, they saw what they call signs of trauma on the body of the victim. And so they ended up calling detectives and the crime scene investigation unit to come down and help lead this investigation. They don't have any details beyond that. In fact, they're looking for anyone with information to contact them. I imagine it was another homeless person who is responsible for this. I imagine, like so many other encampments, this is one that is filled with not just the despair you get when you're homeless, but the, generally speaking, either mental illness or addiction. And sometimes people end up getting violent as a result. Sometimes when you're dealing with criminal elements within the homelessness community, the folks who are willing to steal, you end up getting into fights. And maybe that's what happened here. Maybe that's a result of some sort of fight over territory, even within the encampment. But whatever it is, we can't say that we are surprised by this. We can't say that this is something we don't see coming. You can't say that this is something that is far outside of the norm of what we might expect at a Seattle encampment or any encampment. This is precisely why we want them swept. Keep in mind, you have individuals who are in positions of power, whether we're talking about Seattle, King County, Pierce County, Snohomish County. You've got leaders on the Democrat side who ultimately tell you that it lacks compassion to sweep up these encampments, knowing that people are dying in huge numbers at these encampments. It lacks compassion. Something tells me it would not have lacked compassion had we swept this encampment before this individual was killed. That maybe we would have put pressure on this person to get into shelter, which we have plenty available, to say yes to offers of help, discuss whatever the underlying treatment is and then coming underlying reason is behind their homelessness, and then coming up with either a treatment plan or coming up with some kind of plan to get them to be self-sufficient and get them on the right path. Imagine had we been compassionate enough to do that. But instead, we're compassionate enough to let this guy live out on the streets in an encampment that's very clearly dangerous to the point where he ends up being killed. These stories are happening all the time. And while we might not find a dead homeless body every single day, we do know that they're suffering on the streets. And in large part, they're dealing with mental health issues, with addiction issues, and nothing's being done to help. We allow them to sleep in filth, surrounded by their own human waste, surrounded by used needles, trash. But it lacks compassion to say that we should move them. We should get them inside. Because you have ideologues who view these things through that ideological lens. They're blinded by their ideology. And what do they say? What do they believe? Housing is a human right. A statement that doesn't actually mean anything. That doesn't mean anything. Housing is a human right. What does that mean? What kind of housing? Well, we know that for some folks on the left, the housing they demand is some nice studio apartment on Capitol Hill that otherwise would rent for $3,000 a month. And until they get that, until they get waterfront property or get placed in a high rise, we're not going to bring them off the streets because it's just, it lacks compassion. Right. Sure it does. Meanwhile, not only are the homeless people suffering, but the people who live or work around the homeless people are suffering too. You have the city of Burien dealing with this encampment, a growing encampment, one that every single day that goes by seems to get bigger. And the problem is the county is trying to get in the way of the city clearing this. It was initially located by Burien City Hall. We talked about it a lot, actually. And then after the city moved it from City Hall. It ended up getting set up on land just about a block or so away. Now, it's city-owned land, but a private property owner just got the lease for the land, and they anticipate creating a dog shelter there. Right now, it's kind of this park area. Not that it's usable because it's been completely overtaken by tents. But now the city has leased it over to a private property owner. The private property owner wants, obviously, the encampment to leave. And so the city is thinking about sweeping. And it feels like they're committed to the sweeping, but they just don't have a specific plan in place yet. So last night they had a meeting, a special city council meeting to discuss. Lots of people showed up. Lots of people had different positions.
Well, last I checked, it says we the people. And last I checked, they are people too.
It's not going to get better unless they are willing to put forth their own effort.
I love that first guy who speaks. They're people too. Yeah, they are people. Why do you accept that these people get to live outside surrounded by waste? Would you allow that for your own kids? Your husband, your wife, any family member, any friend? Heck, any coworker, would you accept that? No, of course not. You would offer them a room in your home or a couch in your home just so that they can stay off the streets. So how about this? Why don't we bring them from the streets into your home, sir? Because they're people. You don't seem to be compassionate enough to want them to go into shelter. You seem to be okay with them just staying there in the park. Why don't you invite them into your home? Seriously, go into your home. Now you've got people like Jimmy Mata, Councilmember Mata, who says there's no place to put them. So what are we supposed to do with these quote-unquote campers?
We do have, and we help the regional problem, that there's no drug abuse on this property, right? Because we don't have the resources. So they've said, well, that's up to the provider. We haven't been able to find a provider. So even if we had a location, we don't have a provider.
Then that's on the county. And I know the county doesn't want to get involved. But I propose the city should say to the county, go pound sand. If you're not going to help with your King County Regional Homelessness Authority, then we're going to take matters into our own hands. This is precisely why I don't think the KCRHA, the Regional Homelessness Authority, should exist. It should be disbanded. They might not have a provider that's local to come down. There are people who can come down. Heck, I'm willing to bet Andrea Suarez from We Heart Seattle would go down. I'm willing to bet that. Councilmember Hugo Garcia points out that the county is making things impossible.
Communication hasn't been clear with county and our city manager and our leaders. And I want to help clear that Jimmy and I both spent a lot of time communicating directly with the county. And we just want to make sure that the public is aware of the options so that we can try to make the best of this unfortunate situation.
The truth is right now, there aren't really that many options that are being firmly presented to the people. The council seems to still be a little bit wishy-washy on when they're going to move forward, even though, again, it seems like everyone is on the same page as, not everyone, most of the folks are on the same page of wanting to get rid of this encampment. Just get rid of it. Seriously, just get rid of it. The longer it stays, the more difficult it will be to clear out. Every day, it gets more and more difficult. If they're saying no to offers of shelter that are outside the city of Burien, that is on them. You no longer, as a homeless person, get to take over any space you want to. We're no longer going to be held hostage by folks on the left who are activists who are seemingly fighting to keep these people out on the streets. It's time to take back our cities. More and more people are feeling comfortable speaking up and speaking out. We spoke with a business owner impacted by this encampment, a dentist, a few weeks ago. This is not someone who's some hardcore conservative. This is just a guy who wants to operate his business and make sure that his employees and his clients are safe, his patients are safe. Next to an encampment that is very clearly not. How do we know it's not safe? Because none of them are. That's an unfortunate reality. They breed crime. All of them do. The initial setup of the encampment is a crime. But these people obviously are struggling, and so what do they do to feed themselves? They're stealing. That's how they get by. And rather than forcing them to say yes to the help or pack up, then we enable the behavior because the county doesn't want to go in and sweep. That's on the county. Shame on the county, by the way. Absolutely shame on the county. They could be doing something they choose not to. Dal Constantine is not a leader. This is a guy who's an ideologue who will say and do anything to stay in power. And like so many other officials in King County and mostly Seattle, they fear an activist base will get in their way and make them regret speaking up and trying to do something because they might end up losing their positions of power. But you know what? If you're not doing anything responsible and noble in that position of power, is it really that great to hang on to it? Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
In a lot of ways, it doesn't even matter at this point how the debt ceiling vote goes, right, or went. It's not really about that anymore. At this point, at least from the Republican perspective for House Leader or Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, it's about whether or not he's going to continue to be Speaker of the House. We obviously know that his position came after a lot of infighting. It was a little bit overplayed by the media, but it was dramatic. It is rare to see that kind of drama, and so it was at least interesting. But he has always been in a precarious position because he needed to placate the Freedom Caucus to get them to agree to allow him to become Speaker and stay Speaker. But when he put forward a deal on the debt ceiling that doesn't provide what it is that the Freedom Caucus and other Republicans had demanded, which is basically, number one, meaningful cuts in spending, and number two, long-term solutions. And what they were given in this debt ceiling debacle was just for 2 years. And in 2 years, Republicans might not be in control of the House. Now, we hope that that's not the case. We hope that they pick up more seats. But elections go in various ways for a variety of reasons. And in 2 years, the Republicans might not have control of the House. And they're saying, hey, why would we agree to something like this when this is a very principled position that we're taking and wanting to cut government spending, especially because of how out of control it's grown over the course of the last three years? Why would we only agree to 2 years? Why not make it longer term so that if Democrats take control, they won't immediately go back to the crazy spending again? So you've had more and more Republicans, mostly, though not all, coming from the Freedom Caucus saying they're not going to vote for it. Friend of the show, Representative Ralph Norman is a no. Andy Biggs is a no. Oddly enough, Tom Massey is a yes. But Ken Buck is out there. He was on CNN. And he's sending some pretty clear signals that McCarthy is in some trouble.
I was at Memorial Day events, and when the word about $4 trillion leaked out, people are furious. This is a bill that I think is going to be on the level of Obamacare when you talk about the amount of anger that the American public is going to feel.
I don't know if I believe that. I don't know if the average person, number one, follows the debt ceiling debate, and number two, truly understands it. The nuances, the intricacies, because this is something that is so easily malleable from a narrative standpoint. You've got the Democrats pretending the Republican, MAGA Republicans, are holding the country's economy hostage. No one really truly believes that, but they're hearing it. You've got Republicans saying that out-of-control spending is hurting all of us. It's creating inflation. And while the general public might say, well, I don't like inflation and I'm feeling inflation, they still can't really explain how the debt ceiling leads to higher inflation. Like, this discussion has anything to do with inflation? Just the average person doesn't know that. You're not the average person who's listening right now. The average person doesn't listen to talk radio, doesn't watch any cable news network. Maybe they'll watch, 10 minutes of a nightly newscast. But for the most part, they're watching local news. That's how they get their news. And they're not really getting much on this issue. And so it makes it harder for a narrative to be set in their minds, no matter how hard cable media, frankly, on both sides, try. So at some point, when you get this kind of pushback from Republicans, when you know the media is going to be unfair in how they present this news, you are falling into a potential trap. So it doesn't matter what ends up happening at the end of the day from the traditional consumer standpoint, but it does matter from an actual, you know, real life, real world consequences standpoint, that standpoint where even though we're not necessarily paying attention as closely, the average person, and it's not going to change the way that they vote, it does actually matter. I'm not going to pretend to know the intricacies of what's going on with the debt ceiling discussion. I'm not in love with, as far as I can tell, where this current plan is. They're currently debating. They're currently discussing behind the scenes what's going on. There'll be a vote that will start in the 5 o'clock hour. We got Marsha Blackburn on the show, senator from Tennessee, in the next hour in between some of the debates and the votes. She'll give us some perspective from her position. But at the end of the day, they're going to have to pass something. I agree that it needs to be longer term, not short term. But I also know that it helps to be able to put political pressure on the opposing side on issues that are this deeply contentious. And because the general public isn't paying that close attention to the nuances of this conversation, it's much more difficult for folks on the right to get the necessary pressure to be placed on the Democrats to get a better deal, and frankly, to be placed on certain Republicans to either accept this deal or not accept this deal and go back to the table and have more conversations. At the end of the day, what this does kind of remind us of, it certainly reminded me of, again, regardless of how this ends up going from a voting perspective, McCarthy just doesn't have a whole lot of folks on his side, at least to the numbers that he needs to feel comfortable in his position. And the Republicans don't have a whole lot of folks on their side from a numbers perspective, right? We don't have that many Republicans in the majority right now. And it's about to get smaller. You have Chris Stewart, the congressman from Utah. He's going to resign before the end of this year. That would leave the Republicans with only a 4-seat majority. That's not a lot, especially when you've got the Freedom Caucus there. And so they become a lot more powerful. This announcement was made this morning, this early afternoon, I guess, because his wife is very sick and he's going home to spend more time with her and take care of her. It is a position I think most people completely understand. I think it is a position that other people would likely make. Now, under Utah law, the governor gets to call a special election for this vacancy. Once it is an official resignation, you've got 7 days for the governor to set the time for a primary and get that special election. Those dates have to be the same as municipal primary and general elections scheduled for the year, unless the state legislature gives them funds for a separate election to be held. So obviously, I don't know how that's going to go. Now, a Republican is almost certainly going to fill this vacancy. So it will become a 5-seat majority yet again. But it completely depends on the timing. It completely depends on the timing here. You've got Stewart, Congressman Stewart, who just was up against a Democrat, easily defeating the Democrat. It was, I think, he had 63% of the vote. But you're going to be in a position for potentially weeks to months before we have a 5-seat majority again. And that's going to make Kevin McCarthy's time as Speaker that much more difficult. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
I have to say, there is, for the first time, I think, in a very long time, a bet made between two state governors having to do with a championship game, or sports just in general, that actually is clever and interesting. Usually, you'll have mayors or governors of states or cities that have teams competing in various leagues, the NBA, NHL, MLB, whatever. And you'll have, let's say it's here in Seattle. You've got the mayor, Bruce Harrell, say, I'm going to bet the mayor of whatever the competing team city is, I'm going to bet you that we win. And if we win, or if we lose, we'll give you some salmon. We'll give you some of our world famous salmon, and then the other team or the other city does exactly their version of that. If we lose, we'll give you insert whatever it is that they're known for. It's silly. It's lame. It's frivolous. It used to be kind of cute, I guess. Now it feels like one of those things that you're just supposed to do. Just become rote. Just send out that press release. It's a Mad Libs press release where you say exactly the same thing for each sporting event. You just change the city and you change the name of the mayor or the governor. But in this case, you've got the governor of Colorado, Jared Polis, Democrat, and Ron DeSantis, of course, of Florida. And in this case, he's bringing it, Jared Polis at least, is taking a swipe at DeSantis and making it a little bit more contemporary. You've got the Miami Heat taking on the Nuggets right now in the NBA. And according to this tweet, Polis said, calling Governor Ron DeSantis and Disney on a friendly wager. If the Nuggets win the finals against the Miami Heat, Disney World will move to Colorado, the actual happiest place on earth to do business, have fun, and be free. I thought that was funny and clever. That was good. I mean, obviously, it's based in just a talking point on the left. It's obviously a cheap shot. It's obviously meant to go after Ron DeSantis in a more personal way. But at least it was clever. I will say that. I did think it was clever. And in fairness to Jared Polis, this is not new for him. I remember last year. In fact, I just pulled up the tweet. Last year, he tweeted towards Disney saying, hey, you should come to our place. If you want to for another headquarters, or if you want to just move your whole company, come to us. He wrote, Florida's authoritarian socialist attacks on the private sector are driving businesses away. In Colorado, we don't meddle in affairs of companies like Disney or Twitter. Hey, Disney, we're ready for Mountain Disneyland. And hey, Twitter, we're ready for Twitter HQ2, whoever your owners are. So at least he's been consistent. I haven't seen any response from Governor DeSantis directly. I have to imagine that there's some, you know, fun responses being planned from his social media team, his press team, who are just outstanding. If you don't follow his comms team on Twitter, you are missing out on some record-breaking, historically funny and accurate burns in response. They just keep them coming. I don't think I've ever seen so many burns land, but they're definitely landing when it comes from the DeSantis campaign. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. When you text me, you can also pick what story we discuss in the 4 o'clock hour. Story number one, Democrat senator slams Greater Idaho movement to absorb conservative rural counties from liberal Oregon. Or Air New Zealand announces a plan to weigh passengers before boarding. Which story should I discuss? Text 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
That's nwsafe.com and tell them I sent you.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rant Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon, and that means it's time for the Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services, online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle. And instead, we focus on the communities you live in, the communities you care about most. We start in the city of Redmond. We wanted to do a quick follow-up on a story we first talked about last week. Is it a Thursday, maybe Friday? Where the city of Redmond, via the city's salary commission, decided to speak up in favor of giving council members a salary of $115,000 a year. The problem, of course, is that this is a part-time job. And the arguments that they were making to go that high for a part-time job really doesn't make any sense. And as I said at the time, I have no problem increasing the wages of part-time council members who currently make $19,000 a year. I have no problem with that because I think paying more for these positions will allow someone who otherwise couldn't afford to serve to be able to step forward and serve. It also tells people who are very good at their jobs, hey, this is going to be worth it. Sure, you might lose some money spending time here away from your clients if you're a small business owner who's very successful, but it's going to make up for it. Will it make up in total what you're being paid? No. You'll still end up losing some money, but you're doing it for a greater good. So I think it hits both of those aspects of encouraging the right people to run. But of course, $115,000 is absolutely 100% obscene. And now some of the reasons behind what it is they're doing and being, well, told, no, you're not doing, is as ludicrous as you might believe. The mayor of Redmond, Angela Burney, she came out and she did this like Friday night, right before the long weekend. And I don't know if she did it because it seemed to be controversial, but she disbanded the salary commission. She just disbanded. She said that the commission, quote, have attempted to proceed via special meetings with short notice to staff and the community. She claims that they did that without a comprehensive analysis of council salaries in comparable cities. This according to Cairo 7. And she said their fiscal impact report was pretty much non-existent. It didn't really tell us how it would impact the city budget, how it might affect staff layoffs to account for what would be a 600% increase in pay. And hey, you didn't even give enough notice to the community to step up and speak out or speak in favor of what it is you're proposing. You guys are out of control. You're not following the rules. Bye-bye. Now, Karen, because of course that's her name, Karen Tennyson was on the commission before it was disbanded. She spoke with Cairo 7 TV. And she says this is just about paying a living wage.
And I know everyone said, but it's, you know, public service. You know, you shouldn't overpay them. Well, you should pay them adequately so that they can live here comfortably.
Hey, Karen, if you think it takes $115,000 for a part-time job to live there comfortably, you need to wake up and maybe get a little bit of a clue. Why don't you walk into the community and start talking to some people, the very people that you didn't really want, I suppose, to testify in front of you and provide, you know, city review or provide constituent testimony. Why don't you talk to them? Maybe that's why you didn't want to invite them and didn't give them enough notice, apparently, because maybe you assumed that they might step up and say, whoa, it's time for a reality check. Because the position you're taking here is ludicrous. And again, this is throwing out some silly progressive buzzword of living wage. It's time for a living wage. You hear that line all the time. It doesn't really mean anything. Oftentimes when they say living wage, they're saying what it would cost for one individual to rent a two-bedroom household, which doesn't make sense. If you have two people in a household, it should be based on the two people, not one person, renting a two-bedroom apartment, because most single people don't need to rent a two-bedroom apartment. So it's always been kind of silly to begin with, but it's become this talking point that if you don't pay X amount of dollars, whatever that happens to be, that you're somehow mistreating your employees, you're not paying them what they're worth, that you're not paying them enough to live. Now, the commission was supposed to vote on this pay increase next week. Had they approved the raise, it would have gone into effect 30 days after, unless, of course, Redmond residents put forward a referendum, which, you know, especially when we're talking about on a hyper-local level like that, it's not always easy to accomplish. You got to get someone who's willing to do that. But then Karen, of course, that's her name, Tennyson, somehow concludes that this is all about racism.
It's irritating, and it just tells me that once again, Redmond does not want diversity and to do what's right.
Oh, the white lady complaining is saying that they don't want diversity and to do what's right. Oh, it's just not fair, says the white lady, who so desperately wants to make friends with the what she'll refer to as the BIPOC community. Why won't you love me? Why won't you befriend me? Why won't you accept my Facebook friend request? It's just absolutely ludicrous. I'm glad it's been disbanded. Now, frankly, I don't know if it's legal to just disband it like that. So I'll let the city of Redmond try to figure that part out. And maybe that's why the mayor decided to do this on a Friday night before a long weekend. But ultimately, as a consequence, the right thing happened, which is we're telling these people, yeah, go somewhere else. If you want to become an unhinged activist, go live in Seattle. Don't live in Redmond. Meanwhile, you have just a bizarre story out of Marysville. I can't say that I'm all that familiar with the city of Marysville as I probably should be, in that I don't really know the neighborhoods that well. I know the city as a whole. But when I heard that a 12-year-old boy fell into a well, I immediately said, maybe I don't know anything about the city of Marysville. Is this the kind of city that just has open wells all over the place? I thought this was a city. And what year is it that you've got a well that you can fall down? Especially in this case, because this 12-year-old kid apparently fell into a well while playing during recess on campus, falling 20 feet down. Firefighters, when they arrived, they found him hanging onto a plastic pipe in the wall. partially submerged in water. He wasn't able to touch the bottom of the well, which meant there was a significant concern of this poor kid drowning. So the firefighters lowered a helmet and a life jacket so the boy could put those things on while they tried to figure out how they're going to get the kid out. Just keep him safe. They say over at Q13 or Fox 13, the remaining portion of the well cover was connected to chains at the top of the well, and it started to crumble. Crews delicately removed the remaining concrete and used a ladder to get the boy out. The boy was able to climb out on his own and only had a few cuts on his head somehow. He went to Providence Regional just to get an evaluation. He's going to be okay. The fire chief said it was inspiring to see the quiet, effective, methodical work of each individual working towards an objective. It was a clear visual display of competent professional firefighters doing the work for which they have trained. I'm just shocked that there was a well that was open near a school that a child could fall into to begin with. So perhaps they ought to get that part under control. And then finally, out in Snohomish County, specifically Stanwood, there is a proposal, a plan to build a new behavioral health center. It would go in Stanwood, and the folks who live nearby, they are unhappy. King 5 says the hearing examiner initially approved the conditional land use permit for the project on March 7th, but the decision was appealed by a group of neighbors. The county council held a closed record appeal hearing on May 10th, and the motion was upheld in a May 17th meeting, meaning they get to move forward with this. They continued, the Tulalip tribes, which would own and operate the proposed facility, plans to build on unincorporated land north of Stanwood. They own the land, obviously. They would have a structure that houses up to, or could house up to, 32 mentally ill people for up to 6 months at a time. They would be people who have been involuntarily committed, which means a court is saying, yeah, you're a danger to yourself and others to the point where we have to put you out in this facility so that you don't kill yourself or kill someone else or severely harm them. Now, people who live in the neighborhood are saying this is outrageous. We don't want this here. It's not safe. And the mayor of Stanwood, Sid Roberts, said the first thing you learn is location, location, location. This is, in my opinion, the wrong location, the wrong location, the wrong location. I don't know why they think it's the wrong location for a facility like this. This is a, unless there are plans that say otherwise, and I'm certainly hypersensitive to that kind of thing, given what happened in Tenino. But these are facilities that are supposed to be very secure, because these are involuntarily committed individuals. And you're going to have to put these places somewhere. And while I certainly understand I wouldn't want to live next to one of these places, I get it, totally get it. But they do have to go somewhere. And this is not the same as sex offenders going into a location in Tenino right across the street from kids. This is an unincorporated part of a city. This is the exact location where you would want something like this to be. I hope that the concerns from these neighbors are heard and addressed, and their concerns over security are heard and addressed. And if they're not, then I'm going to join with them in trying to push back against this thing. But you do have to create these facilities, and no one's going to want to live near them. And so you just have to make sure that you're bringing in the community early enough where they can help be a part of the security concerns, addressing them, and addressing any other concern they might have. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. When we come back, you decide the story. Text your story suggestion. Democrat senator slams the Greater Idaho movement. Or Air New Zealand announces a plan to weigh passengers before boarding. Which story should I discuss? 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rand Show.
You pick the topic on the Jason Rand Show.
Indeed, you do get to pick the news, and you went with a topic I'm finding more and more and more intriguing. You picked the story out of Fox News. Democrat senator slams the Greater Idaho movement to absorb conservative rural counties from liberal Oregon. Part of the reason why this intrigues me more and more is not necessarily because it will happen. It is almost certainly not going to happen. We'll get into why in a moment. But because of what this movement actually stands for and how folks are reacting. So in this case, you've got Senator Merkley, the Democrat from Oregon, speaking out against this campaign that basically says the rural part of eastern Oregon would be swallowed up. It would secede and would be swallowed up by Idaho, which is considerably more conservative and more aligned with the ideological principles and values of this portion of Oregon. Like here in Washington State, there are a lot of folks, frankly, not just in eastern Washington, but across the state that are upset that effectively the politics of Seattle get to dictate what goes on statewide, that the folks who live on the east side of the state or even central part of the state are being told that Seattle liberals who have no idea what it's like to live in, say, Richland or Republic, they're the ones calling all the shots, and it's just not fair that they don't feel like they're heard or represented. And the same issue is at play in Oregon, where you've got basically the same argument. Look, Portland does not speak for us. Multnomah County does not speak for us. And yet somehow we are always subject to the whims of the folks who live there simply because our communities are smaller in demographic numbers, population numbers, than in Portland. And these are issues that impact us arguably harder than it would in Portland. When you're talking about the tax hikes, when you're talking about permissiveness around drug use and homelessness, yeah, we are smaller cities and counties, and we can't afford to deal with the problem the same way that Portland does. And Portland, you're weird enough. We don't want your weirdness. And so they started this movement called the Greater Idaho Movement. But Democrats in particular are calling this out. You had Merkley, the senator, speaking at a town hall at a local high school over the weekend. And he says that this is something that could be addressed, but because the project or this goal has no chance of coming to fruition, we might as well give up now. He said there are a whole set of barriers that would make this process difficult. I would not want to see the state carved up. I love every part of it. Of course, he doesn't love every part of it. Senator Merkley, again, much like Senators Murray and Cantwell, they only love certain parts of the states that they represent, which is why they don't spend all that much time talking about the east side of the state or central Washington. They'll talk about it during election season. But when was the last time you heard anything from Maria Cantwell about what's going on in Yakima? What's going on, frankly, again, because I don't think it's just eastern Washington, what's going on in Aberdeen or Ocean Shore? Do you ever hear Patty Murray talking about that? No, of course not. Because they don't really care about those places as much as they care about Seattle and Tacoma, because that is where the populations are and that's where a lot of money is. They'll spend some time in Spokane merely because of the numbers of people who live there. But that's the only reason. And it's kind of absurd. But at this point, you've got a resolution in the state of Idaho now that is basically saying, look, we're not going to move the border. We're not going to take that point yet, but we're going to, if this passes, we'll have formal talks between our state legislature and the legislature in Oregon about whether or not we want to pursue relocating our borders. And they've passed this bill in the past. I imagine they will pass it this time. And the question is, what will Oregon do? You've got 11 counties right now in eastern Oregon who have already voted for the ballot measure that says we should be exploring this idea. We should be having more formal conversations. We've got that. We still have one vote that's still coming in, Wallowa County. And it, as of right now, it looks like it's going to pass, but it is close. And so assuming that one passes the way that we anticipate, that's going to bring the number of counties to 12. There's internal or external polling, I should say, out in Idaho that said folks there are pretty much in favor of expanding the boundary. And that makes sense from an Idaho perspective. The question doesn't, it's not about whether or not Idaho wants it to happen, because they would become larger. They would have more representation in Congress. They like that idea. Obviously, economically, there would be a little bit of an increase in dollars coming into the state. But really, it's about whether or not Oregon wants to give up on eastern Washington. They don't care about eastern Washington, but they don't want to give up any representation. They don't want to give up any tax revenue. They don't want to give up any land because it's kind of a bad look. So there is a state senator on the Idaho side. Her name is Representative Barbara Earhart. Now, she did an interview not too long ago with Fox News and Fox and Friends, and I thought that she was making some really good points, because at the end of the day, I would argue the reason why this is an important story is because it tells you that people don't feel heard, and there appears to be no movement from Democrats. And in this case, it is Democrats in charge in Oregon who say, you know what, these people don't feel heard. Maybe we should start listening to them. We might not agree with them on what they would like to see happen in our state, but they deserve a seat at the table just as much as someone who represents Portland or Eugene. And if they don't feel heard, maybe we should step up to make sure that they at least feel heard. They might not get anything that they want. They might not win any legislative battle. But it is important for them to feel heard. And from Idaho's perspective, they're like, yeah, we'll hear you.
You know, this has been an interesting experience from the very beginning when I was approached about just listening to a conversation, just over 2 years ago. It made sense right away. It made sense to look at some like-minded people. And also for us in Idaho, why not have that conversation? We've been the fastest growing state in the nation. We have, you know, a lot of people moving in here to look at that landmass, to look at the resources, the water, the timber, you know, the minerals. Why not have that conversation? And on top of it, we look at what's happening to Eastern Oregon. They do not share the same values as those who are passing and making these decisions. These decisions are completely antithetical to a constitutional republic. It's really kind of disappointing.
I think she's 100% correct. I don't come at this from the perspective, obviously, of living on the east side of this state or certainly of Oregon. But as someone who lives in the city of Seattle, I certainly know what it feels like to not feel heard. I have positions that obviously, because of where I live, I'm surrounded by folks who are very, very, very far to the left. People don't agree with my positions, and my positions generally don't get voted in. Now, that's starting to change in some regards because a lot of my positions aren't even necessarily political. Like, we should have more policing. We should enforce the law when it comes to drug use and homelessness. Those are pretty basic positions. Sure, I've got some solutions, I suppose, that could be viewed as being seen through a political lens. But ultimately, I don't find them to be all that political. Now, so some of this is changing, which is heartening, I suppose. It's just very slow. But I would love to be able for once to vote for someone who actually goes into office. The only one that I can think of in recent memory was Seattle City Attorney Ann Davison. I voted for her and she won. That was it for the last, 15 years that I've been voting in Seattle? It's absurd.
Both states would have to agree to this. And then if that happened, then it would go to Congress and Congress would then have to approve it. And though many people say, you know, this is not possible. There's a lot that has to happen before, you know, for this to even be considered. I say, I grant that. This seems like a big wish list. But you know what? Without taking these steps and having these conversations and Oregon having their counties vote to move forward on this, it certainly wouldn't happen. But, you know, personally, I think it could happen. I like the idea.
I like the idea. It's not going to happen. That's the unfortunate reality. But I like the idea. And again, I do like the pressure that it should put on leaders. If they're true leaders in Oregon, they would look at this as an opportunity to reset the relationship between what's going on the west side of the state and the east side of the state, or really what's going on in Multnomah County and the 13 counties on the east side that have already voted in favor of this. Real leaders would have that conversation. Will some of them eventually step up and be real leaders? Well, one can hope. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.